The Honorable Judges of the United States Court of Appeals in and for the Second Judicial Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business before this Honorable Court are admonished to draw near and give their attention to this Court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument this afternoon is in the matter of the Archdiocese of Milwaukee, Appeal of Claimant Number A49. Mr. Anderson.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeff Anderson. I am the attorney for the appellant, A49. We are here seeking reversal of the decision made by the Bankruptcy Court initially granting summary judgment, appealed to the District Court, and affirmed to the District Court. The issues, and the central issue, is do the statements made by A49 to the Chancellor Cusick in the mediation, that I believed them, and the answers that they gave to him were very important to him, sufficient in the context in which they were made and the record before us to create a tribal issue of fact. There is a second issue, and that is, did the court, having made a finding about reliance, abuse its discretion in not permitting us to supplement the record, either by affidavit or testimony at the time? We believe the first issue, of course, to be central, and that is, in the affidavit of A49, he, to the chancellor, to an official of the archdiocese, the mediation, as a Catholic, said, I want to know if there were prior reports of abuse by the offender. And I also want to know if there were any at my parish. And he was told there was not. And these statements to him, he attested in his affidavit that he believed them, Cusick, when she told him this, and that it was very important to him.
But is there anything more specific about why it was important? He did enter into a settlement agreement for, you know, a certain amount of money. Some may think a lot, some may think not. But he entered into a settlement agreement. And it's so vague, I'm just not sure saying it's important tells me very much about why.
Well, nobody asked him that question in the record, and so because it was by affidavit, I can suggest what his motivations are, but I don't think there's anything detailed in the record other than to say that as a survivor approaching a mediation with the Archdiocese, and he has no knowledge about the history of the offender, knowing whether or not there is a prior history to him was important emotionally and for his own healing, and whether or not he wanted to even move forward with them. And
does it need to be that? I mean, when we look at the claim of intentional misrepresentation, we're focusing on the reliance element. And I wonder whether the emotional grounds you're talking about are the type of thing that we're supposed to consider, or whether there needs to be some theory that if he had known there had been earlier reports, it's very speculative, but he would have held out for a higher amount of money, or I'm just not clear how it comes to him.
Well, I think it's his emotional state is in the record, and he was emotional, and there is a disparity of power between them. But I think what is important in the analysis is, does the statement that I believed him constitute reliance for purposes of satisfaction of the element? And the significance about that is, if you look at the dictionary, reliance and belief are the same.
Judge Wood's question in a somewhat different way. Has A49 tendered a supplemental affidavit in which he says, here's why I think reliance has been satisfied? All right, your brief says the district court should have allowed, the bankruptcy court should have allowed or invited more. But has A49 filed what that more would have been so that we could take a look at concretely what it is?
The answer is he has not, and I believe the reason he has not filed an additional affidavit is that this issue was only raised by the appellee archdiocese in their reply brief.
Yes, I understand that, but you can still then file a supplemental affidavit. Indeed, you could have filed a supplemental affidavit in this court saying, if the bankruptcy judge had allowed me to say more, here's what I would have said. It's in the nature of an offer of proof.
If we could have filed one before this court, I was not aware of that, so we didn't. We did at the trial court level, however, say to the trial court, may we file a supplemental affidavit? May we also offer testimony? And we offered to offer testimony at that moment in time because the claimant was there. So we did so on the spot as soon as we realized there was a concern raised. And the reply brief had been filed by them, and this issue raised only 10 days before the actual hearing. The second thing that I think the court went wrong on was the inferences. Of course, the inferences must be drawn in favor of the non-moving party. In this case, the inferences...
Let me ask it still a third way. Has A49 said, if not on the record, at least to you, that he is prepared to say under oath that he would have rejected the archdiocese's offer if he had known then what he knows now?
The answer to that is positively.
So why hasn't he done that? If he had done that ever, we wouldn't be here, I think.
I think my answer is that we asked for the opportunity to do that. And having been denied that opportunity, we believe that that constitutes an error by the court not having given him and us that opportunity to file the supplemental affidavit. Concerning reliance, and it wasn't the discretion of the court, and the rules allow it. Another consideration here is not only the drawing the inference against the non-moving party, but if you look at the disparity of power between them, him having just met as a Catholic with the archdiocese, now meeting with an official of the archdiocese, him having to wanting to know these things before moving forward, and then having been told something that proves to be, by this record, false.
That really goes to the materiality question, I think.
It does, but it also goes to the trust. And if you look at the definition, Your Honor, of belief in the dictionary, it says to have faith.
I'm going to stop you right there because I don't think you can equate the definition of belief with the definition of reliance. The two are different. You can believe something and not rely on it to your detriment in the course of negotiations, which is what was going on here in this mediation, negotiating a settlement. I'd like to know what the relationship is or what you think under Wisconsin law, the relationship between the materiality element of a fraud and the inducement claim, or this is essentially not an affirmative claim for fraud in the inducement, but a rescission claim. You're trying to get out of the contract or rescind the contract. What's the relationship between the materiality element of that sort of claim that the contract is voidable and that you'd like to void it, and the reliance element?
Well, I think there is a direct connection. It has to be a material representation, misrepresentation, and there must be reliance. In our record here, his statement that I believed him and trusted him constitutes the underlying facts.
Maybe I could be more specific. In some jurisdictions, if in a fraud in the inducement claim for rescission of a contract, once materiality is shown, a presumption arises that the party relied on it in the course of entering into the agreement and giving his assent to the agreement. Does Wisconsin follow that rule?
I believe it does. I can't be certain of that, and I can't cite a case for it. So
I couldn't find one.
It makes sense to me, but I can't cite authority on that.
Do you think the Wisconsin Supreme Court would recognize that rule, which is recognized in some jurisdictions but not all?
Given the Supreme Court's analysis of fraud, that gives rise to the causes of action that was argued in Minnesota Supreme Court, as this court knows, and in the Wisconsin Supreme Court, excuse me, I would think that that would be a likely analysis, but I'm speculating.
Let's have some reasons to back up that prediction.
Well, they're each essential elements. Without one, you can't have the other, and you can't have a fraud or a fraud in the inducement, and they seem interconnected.
Okay. Well, you're not offering me anything in particular regarding the jurisprudence of the Wisconsin Supreme Court on fraud or fraud in the inducement in particular that suggests that they would adopt that kind of an approach to these claims. In other words, once materiality is shown, there's a presumption, and the burden for demonstrating reliance is not as heavy.
Well, I'm not citing any authority for the existence of presumption because I'm not aware of it.
Okay. I mean, the court has notoriously been divided on fraud and the inducement theory. Fair?
I think if we looked at Chitwood, it may inform on this. With Chitwood, he was told that it was her understanding, or she was told it was her understanding that oxygen would not come in contact with feed, and the jury could have inferred from this testimony that she relied on that understanding in purchasing the product.
I
think that informs perhaps on the topic and is in support of the position we're taking. I think another consideration here is the totality of the circumstances. And it weighs heavily in favor of inferences to be drawn in favor, not against A49. When you look at the fact that he had met with the archbishops before this, his emotional state, the amount of information the archdiocese had in their possession and not in his, and they had those files in their possession and that information. He did not. He asked the question, and he was told something other than what they knew.
I'm puzzled, counsel, by the persistent emphasis on A49's emotional state. This case wasn't settled for emotion. It was settled for money. Now, I would think to make out a claim of detrimental reliance on a misrepresentation, the theme would be it was worth more money than we'd known the truth than otherwise. But I didn't see such an argument in your brief.
Your Honor, I think that we're relying more on the disparity of power than his emotional state.
But the problem with that answer is that there was a settlement. You're asking for it to be set aside because of this additional information that's come out, but without some reason to think it would result in a different outcome, then you're really just asking us to express our kind of vague opinion about something. There could have been theories, I'm sure, that would have shown, had he known that abuse was going on as early as the 70s when he was victimized and that they knew, maybe that would have changed something, but I can't put words in your mouth any more than my colleagues can, and the adversary process itself doesn't work well when each side isn't informing the other of what the real theories are. It's hard to see how the Archdiocese would have known how to respond to your arguments.
Well, the Archdiocese could have responded to the argument, and they could have answered the question truthfully.
What I'm saying is if the problem is that it's emotional damage, I don't see where you tie that into, the need for lifelong psychiatric care, why it's worse knowing what he knows now than it was anyway, just because of the underlying events, which are certainly bad enough. I'm not sure what has changed, really.
Well, we believe that that's really for the trier of fact, and for the court to say
is
a matter of
theory.
Well, I think it's really for the trier of fact, and if the court reverses that, we're prepared to make that record and allow the trier of fact to decide those very things, what the emotional state is, was, and why that is important to allowing this claim to go forward when, in fact, he was misled.
While your time remains, I have one factual question. It's normally essential in a request for rescission of a contract that the consideration under the contract be repaid. Has your client repaid the money it received from the archdiocese or offered to tender it back?
He has not. It has not been
capable of tendering the consideration back?
That is unlikely, but that's not something that has been pursued nor explored.
Well, but if your client is unlikely to be able to pay it back, one wonders what this is all about, because you can't get rescission without repayment.
I think that would be something to develop in the record when we're in the trial court, and hopefully we will be there. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Mr. LaCocca.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Judge, judges, may it please the court, good afternoon. We're honored to be here today under these special circumstances. As the court is aware, we have really two issues that the court has to face in the context of A49's appeal here. I want to start, though, with just a little bit of context, which will, I think, help frame the issues. The first is that in the context of the Chapter 11, claimant A49's claim is one of about 100 persons who have filed proofs of claim in the underlying Chapter 11 attempting to rescind their contracts, their settlement agreements. And those settlement agreements come out of what was a voluntary mediation program that was set up by then-Archbishop, now Cardinal Timothy Dolan, in late 2004, early 2005, when the state of Wisconsin law was such that none of these abuse survivors had access to a viable claim, a viable legal theory. This was years before the Wisconsin Supreme Court's decision in John Doe 1 versus the Archdiocese of Milwaukee, which permitted survivors to pursue a fraud claim. So this was a voluntary process. A49 voluntarily participated in it in late 2006. In early 2007, he agreed to a settlement agreement that included the material terms of the settlement agreement. He was going to get $100,000. That was a material term. It was in the settlement agreement.
So let me ask you, though. I mean, that's all great that this happened on a voluntary basis, but where we are now is with the question of rescission. And as I understand it, the normal elements would include a statement of fact that's untrue, made with intent to defraud, the other party relies to his or her detriment, the reliance is reasonable, probably materiality comes in at least on that last thing. But the focus before us has been whether there's enough of a showing of reliance to allow the rescission. And for that, you know, I look at this statement where he says, I believe that Barbara Cusack, who I take it nobody disputes that she was a representative of the Archdiocese for this purpose, was telling the truth during mediation when I asked her about Hanser's history and other abuse. And then he says, both of these answers were very important to me. Now, in lay terms, how much more clearly can you state reliance? What could that sentence possibly mean other than I relied on her statements? I thought she was telling the truth, and it mattered a lot to me.
And I think it's really very simple, Judge Wood. You would go on to say, and because of these statements, in light of these statements that I thought were true, that were important to me, I wouldn't have entered into this settlement agreement.
But you see, we all know that that's what he means. You know, the fact that it's not tied up with a bow at the end of that paragraph 12. Not clear to me that really matters much at this stage. I don't know if this litigation were to proceed, whether he would get a nickel more. Maybe his showing wouldn't be adequate. Maybe it would be. I mean, I make no predictions about that. But when I look at this, particularly this paragraph 12, when he says he thought she was telling the truth and her answers were important, it seems to me like a statement that I relied, and that's why I settled for the $100,000.
Well, Your Honor, I guess I would respectfully disagree with the court's view of that. I don't think that that is obvious. The bankruptcy court certainly...
What do you think it could mean if not, I relied and therefore... And do you have any other theories of meaning?
Well, the appellant wants this court to draw...
I'm asking you, when you read that paragraph,
yes,
as a sensible person, do you... What alternative readings am I missing?
Well, the alternative reading is... I can't sign an affidavit that says I relied on these statements to my detriment. Therefore, this is as far as I'm going to go and hope that I get past summary judgment.
Normal people don't say I relied on these statements to my detriment. It, you know, even after you've gotten a JD, normal people don't say that. Right? But I take it A49 doesn't have a JD. He talks like normal people. To the extent you're complaining that the affidavit doesn't read like it was written by a lawyer and then signed by A49, well, maybe that's true, but why don't we use normal inferential standards when we're dealing with a layperson's statement?
Well, because where I was going next, and maybe this lawyer with a JD isn't sensible or reasonable, is that in the context of this Chapter 11 and his claim, he is represented by able counsel who knows the elements of the claim. And in addition, we have had this claim decided for many months now. And the court asked Mr. Anderson about this. There has yet to be an offer of proof made by Mr. Anderson or Mr. Finnegan with respect to what the client would have said.
As you could hear, that was a question I asked, and that troubles me that that hasn't been done. On the other hand, Mr. Anderson said point blank that his client was willing to swear under oath that if he had known the truth, he would not have accepted the Archdiocese's offer. And that certainly, if believed, establishes reliance.
Today was the first day that I've ever heard that.
It may be the first time he was really asked point blank. So how hard is it to think that as a person in this situation, if he had thought that the information didn't come to the attention of the Archdiocese until the mid-1980s, which is what CUSAC, we have to assume CUSAC, said, maybe he would be willing to accept less money, but if he thought that they'd been told over and over again that there was a problem, then there's a greater culpability. These kinds of factors do enter into settlements.
They do, and they oftentimes end up in the settlement agreement.
But, of course, he didn't know. She told him it wasn't until the 1980s. That's why it didn't, and that's why he says, I thought she was telling the truth, and that really mattered a lot to me. In other words, what was she telling the truth about? Exactly.
Well,
this.
In fairness to Dr. Cusack, we're not at the point of this litigation where her view of what was said is in the record.
I totally understand that, and that's why I said we have to take as, for present purposes, established. I'm not making any ultimate decision. But we do have to take that. So we have to proceed now as though she said what A49 says she said.
Well, let me see if I can try and deal with it a little bit differently. Judge Sykes asked about the issue of rescission and materiality. And the chief did as well. We didn't get to the issue of rescission. It was argued we didn't get there in the underlying litigation because both Judge Kelly and Judge Randa found that the affidavit, the evidence presented, was lacking. The appellant, A49's duty, once we presented the settlement agreement, which included the broad form release, was to provide evidence. And this is the middle burden, clear, satisfactory, and convincing evidence to put this issue at issue. And two judges have found that those statements don't equal detrimental reliance. And, of course, this court doesn't have to affirm that.
There was a problem with the legal standard, it seems to me, that the courts were applying, though. It was almost as if they adopted a view that these representations were a necessary condition to his decision to accept the settlement. And that's not an accurate statement of Wisconsin law. All that's needed is that it have been a substantial factor. That's Wisconsin law in this area. And that's not the legal standard that was applied. So there's a legal mistake. Now, that may not affect us because we're here on de novo review of a summary judgment, mm-hmm. but we have to get the right legal framework here in order to fit this fact pattern into it. So let's use the right legal standard. It's not a necessary condition. It's not a but-for kind of causation in that sense. Wisconsin uses the substantial factor causation formula. And that has an effect on the evaluation of whether this affidavit is sufficient or not to get the issue to a jury.
And I guess my response, Your Honor, is that we don't believe that the affidavit leads to a conclusion or an inference that these representations or alleged misrepresentations were a substantial factor, and two other courts have found the same. And
well, they were applying a higher standard, as I've just suggested. Okay. So let's apply the right standard, and why is it that the representations that are the basis of the rescissionary claim here, or rescissionary defense is really what it is. Is not a substantial factor. Why doesn't it meet that test?
Well, one of the standards that is talked about in the Noddy case is whether it is objectively reasonable in the context of a mediation.
But the Noddy case has two different ways of getting at this, subjective and objective. And
right.
I think this one is being argued anyway as a subjective claim of materiality.
And that's certainly the basis for the findings by both, I believe, by both Judge Kelly and Judge Randa, which is what you'd kind of expect that the person who's the subject of the receiver of the alleged misrepresentations would say, of course, I relied on this. I believe that in the context of a mediation, a voluntary mediation, where A49 could have walked away at any time, it is not objectively reasonable in the context of what he got, $100,000 settlement in exchange for a release, to say that these two statements, after however long the mediation occurred, would have actually made a difference.
Well, let's separate out the materiality inquiry from the reliance inquiry. They're separate steps, and
right.
they've often collapsed. And in the cases, they're often collapsed.
Right.
The court doesn't speak of them separately very often, apart from listing the elements of the claim or the defense. The materiality has two iterations, the materiality inquiry. It can be either objective materiality, what would a reasonable person under these circumstances think is material to this negotiation, but then there's an alternative theory of materiality, which is the subjective theory. Once there's evidence of either one of those, how does that impact the evaluation of the reliance element? Does Wisconsin recognize the presumption that I referred to earlier that some other jurisdictions recognize that once materiality has been established, not in an affirmative claim for fraud, because then you need actual reliance, but in a fraud in the inducement where it's being, where the theory is being used for rescission of a contract, the law is a little bit different, and some jurisdictions do recognize this presumption. Is Wisconsin one of them?
Your Honor, with all due honesty, I would feel more comfortable if the court wishes to do some post-argument briefing on this issue. As I mentioned earlier, we haven't briefed for this court the issue of rescission and the standard in that respect, and I candidly didn't look at it in the context of this argument given the way the briefs were presented. So we're more than happy to present something to the court if you wish on that issue. I guess
if the court thinks we need to get into it,
sure.
We will issue a supplemental briefing order.
Thank you. One other comment I do want to make, which the bankruptcy court mentioned and didn't get to, and it's the issue of whether any of this matters. In her decision, the bankruptcy court mentioned the fact that mediation communications, oral communications in a mediation, are given great sanctity in many ways. There is a statute that that affects this. It's section 904.085 of the Wisconsin statutes. It says that unless a particular very narrow exception fits, oral communications are not permitted in evidence. And with all due respect, the bankruptcy court could have dealt with the case either by going to 904.085 first or by dealing with the affidavit.
I'm lost. Is it, is it the premise of this argument that state rules determine what evidence is admissible in federal litigation?
No. But it is the premise that that particular statute, section 904.085, is a substantive rule of law. It's a substantive immunity. It's a substantive privilege, which would be applied in the context of...
But this bankruptcy litigation is litigation under federal law, and in federal litigation under federal law, federal privilege rules control.
In this context, Your Honor, you're dealing with a mediation that was done subject to the Wisconsin rules. That
I understand that, but you are in federal bankruptcy court under federal law. The idea that state law would control what evidence is admissible is... Well, puzzling.
Well,
it's not a ground on which you wish to pitch your argument, I think.
Your Honor, I believe that this is an immunity that applies because the mediation was conducted subject to an agreement that the parties executed that included the application as a material term of 904.085.
Mm-hmm.
But as I've said, we don't get there.
Yes. Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Anderson, we'll give you 1 minute for rebuttal.
Anderson, what's your best evidence of materiality? That should not be a real hard question.
Well, that he came into that mediation wanting information, needing information in order to be able to move forward, and asking the right questions and getting false answers.
I need something specific to the two misrepresentations on which this whole claim are based. You've got two representations or two questions that were asked and answered that you're basing your rescissionary claim on. What is your best argument and best evidence that those were material to his decision whether to enter into the settlement?
That he needed to know if there had been prior reports, and they lied to him about the fact that they knew that there were.
That's just a statement of what you asked or what your client asked.
Well, I guess the best evidence is he said in his own words it was very important to me.
But why?
Is there any evidence he would have held out for more money if he had known? I mean, what's... The next step is what Judge Sykes is asking you about.
He's unrepresented by a lawyer. At the time, he had a viable claim for fraud. He would not have known that, but he would have known that he could not trust.
He's represented by a lawyer now, and you've now heard from all three of us the question, how do we know he would have held out for more money? And you say yes. And now Judge Sykes has asked you the question, why? Because that's what the materiality question is, and you're not giving an answer about why this was something that would have led him to hold out for more money.
Well, if they had answered the question truthfully and said, yes, there were reports, as there are in this record, and if they had told him that there were reports at that parish, which he also asked, it would have been a different negotiation. It would have been a negotiation which he may have ended with a different result.
But not as under then-existing Wisconsin law. These claims were not authorized or recognized. They were completely non-cognizable until the later decision of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So that's where there's a disconnect here.
I don't think Wisconsin law puts any imprimatur on fraud in the inducement, whether it's in or out of the mediation.
I'm missing my point. His underlying claim against the Archdiocese was not cognizable.
At that time, it was 2007.
So why would the Archdiocese have put more money on the table since it was under no legal obligation at that time in Wisconsin to put any money on the table?
We were in the Wisconsin Supreme Court at that time arguing fraud.
Okay.
And they found that fraud is a basis to bring a claim.
So that action was pending then?
That action was pending, yeah.
Not yet decided?
It was very close to having been decided, but I think it was pending. Yeah.
Okay.
And I think the analysis of the court where they went wrong was using WorldCom as a comparison, and they said in the order, because WorldCom is between two businesses of equal power, and we don't have that here. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.